passage of scripture read this morning as our epistle came from the 8th chapter of St. Paul's letter to the Christians in Rome. Of the 14 letters in the New Testament attributed to Paul, only 7 are thought by scholars to be from the pen of one man, and he was probably Paul of Tarsus. The letter to the church in Rome, the first recorded in the Bible, although not the first written, was most certainly one of them. It is the only epistle addressed to a church community that Paul did not found, unlike, for example, those to the Corinthians, the Galatians, the Philippians, and his first letter to the Thessalonians. That Paul ultimately went to Rome is made clear from a reading of the Acts of the Apostles. In Jerusalem, he had been falsely accused of bringing Gentiles into the Jewish temple. He had been seen in the company of Trophimus, a native of Ephesus, and it was assumed, albeit wrongly, that Paul had taken him into the temple, a place forbidden to non-Jews. He was seized and dragged out into the street, where a riot ensued. For his own safety, he was taken in chains by the Roman tribune Lysias to the fortress Antonia, which stood beside the temple. The centurion in charge of the military detachment was so keen to understand why the Jews had fomented such turmoil because of this one man that he gave instructions that Paul was to be taken into the barracks to be examined by flogging. We know from Pontius Pilate's desire to have Jesus flogged before he released him just how arbitrary was the Roman system of justice as meted out to their subordinate peoples. In those times, you didn't need to be guilty of any crime to receive this form of chastisement. Paul calmly asked the centurion if he could legally flog a man who was not only a Roman citizen, but moreover had not been found guilty of any offence. It was later learned that the Jews were planning to ambush Paul, so he was sent under heavy escort to Caesarea into the custody of Felix, the procurator. Later, a Roman named Festus took over as governor of Caesarea, and wishing to ingratiate himself with the Jews, suggested that Paul should be sent back to Jerusalem to face his accusers. Paul explained that while he was not trying to escape justice or even avoid the death penalty, the Jews had no case against him. He eventually decided to exercise the right of every Roman citizen to be tried before the emperor. He said, "I appeal to Caesar." The problem with an appeal to Caesar was that it couldn't be revoked or rescinded. Paul couldn't later say, "The threat of capture by the Jews has passed. Please release me." No, to Caesar he had appealed, and to Rome he would have to go. And a reading of chapters 27 and 28 of Acts give us a wonderful adventure story of the trials and tribulations of the voyage, a journey made almost entirely by sea. After departing from Caesarea, the company sailed along the southern coasts of what is now called Turkey, to Crete, and across the Mediterranean to Malta, where they were shipwrecked, probably in the year AD 60. After a long delay to find another suitable boat, Paul and his company sailed to Syracuse on Sicily, and thence up the western side of what we now call Italy, and finally to Rome. In Rome, Paul was put under house arrest, with a soldier to guard him. It was 2 or 3 years before his arrival in Rome that Paul had written his letter to the Christians there. As he had never met any of them, his letter contains none of the personal contacts we see in other epistles. There are no domestic matters needing his attention, no doctrinal errors requiring his mediation, or threatening dangers demanding his attendance. It is a very impersonal nature. It becomes more a pure theological treatise. Scholars have applied two very different adjectives to Paul's letter to the Romans: testamentary and prophylactic. In the former description, Paul's work is seen in the light of a last will and testament. It is almost as if Paul